Corral. Now, the story of Joseph and his life unfolds for us much like a serial on television. Each time that there is a chapter that ends, we're normally left with some questions. We're left with some unanswered challenges that lay before us. And then as we come to the next chapter, those are taken up, and systematically they are opened up for us that we might understand what is taking place. The same is true today. When last we saw Joseph, he was on his way to Egypt. He had been taken by some Ishmaelites. They were on their way to Egypt, and they were going to sell him into slavery. If you'll look with me at chapter 39 of the book of Genesis. And chapter 39 really picks up where chapter 37 leaves off. You remember chapter 38 dealt with Judah. And as we come to chapter 39 this morning, we pick up where we left off in chapter 37. So in Genesis chapter 39 and verse 1, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither." Now, as far as we can tell, Joseph had been in Egypt, when we come to the main part of this chapter, for about 10 years. As close as we can tell, he was probably about 26 or 27 years of age at the time that chapter 39 begins to unfold. He's been sold into slavery. He was put on the block with the rest of the slaves. They would bring the slaves in from all of the various countries that would surround the nation of Egypt. And then they would put them out on a block where everyone could see, and the bidding would begin. Joseph was chosen by a man of very high rank in the Egyptian government. Now, we don't know why exactly it was chosen in that manner from a human standpoint, other than the fact that it perhaps was his Hebrew heritage, or it may be, as we find out later in our story, that he was of a beautiful countenance, he had a great physique, that we don't know if that was why he was chosen by this man of high regard or not, but Potiphar, who was really the chief of police, if you will, for Pharaoh, chose him, and he chose him not only to be a personal slave, but he chose him to be a steward. He chose him to be that one who would have the oversight of his very home. So suddenly, Joseph is taken from a place of favorite son, being with a doting father, and he's transferred to their other office there in Egypt, where now he is working for Potiphar. And he is interesting in many ways, but as we look at the life of Joseph, we're going to see that he was the only one of the patriarchs in the book of Genesis that did not have a face-to-face confrontation with Jesus Christ. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob all had an appointment with God in which they looked into the face of God and God looked back at them, and there was that face-to-face confrontation. And yet when we come to the life of Joseph, we find that that is never mentioned. And yet we see in the life of Joseph the providential guidance that God places in a life, probably more than all of the other patriarchs put together. And so we see, and we see an answer really to the question that many times we offer when we say, you know, I really wish that I could have an experience like the people in the Old Testament did when they wondered about something, when they questioned something in their own life, and God would just suddenly appear and he would talk to them. Boy, I wish that were true today. And yet we see in the life of Joseph God's providential care in his life. We see that God is constantly working in his life, and there is never a question in Joseph's life but what that God is at work there, and he understands that. And I think it gives us some solace when we realize the fact that God is there and he's at work, even when we don't have those face-to-face confrontations. So we see here that God is superintending in the life of Joseph. Now, if you'd like a short outline of the 39th chapter of Genesis, I can give that to you, and it may help you as we move through it. In verses 1 through 6, there is the test of prosperity. In verses 7 through 12, there is the test of purity. And in verses 13 through 23, there is the test of persecution. Prosperity, purity, and persecution. Now let's note, first of all, the test of prosperity. We see that in the first 6 verses. Since we've already read the first 2 verses together, let's begin with verse 3. And his master, speaking of Joseph, saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from that time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. Now there is not any greater testimony to the prosperity of an individual anywhere in the Bible than what we find here. It's very seldom that you hear a lot about prosperity and the prosperity of individuals in the Bible, and yet there is no way to explain, there is no way to define what is happening with that upwardly mobile movement that Joseph was having. Joseph was the yuppie of his day there in Egypt. He is moving quickly in a very mobile way. And we find here, first of all, that Joseph came to a place of prominence. We're going to see in his life that he experienced during this time the motivations that normally will motivate a man or a woman as they try to achieve great things today in our society. Notice with me, first of all, this place of prominence. The scripture says he was selected as a slave to serve in the household of Potiphar. Potiphar was one of the chief executives of Pharaoh. Now, that means that Joseph would have lived in his day in a place that would have been very similar to the White House, which means he would have had some inroads to those people that would come to see Pharaoh, heads of state, other men of high regard. As they would come into that kingdom, sooner or later they would come in contact with Joseph. He would get to know them, and they would get to know Joseph. And all of these prominent people that were coming through, I'm sure, would hear from Potiphar about this young Jewish man who was so good, who was so shrewd, who had made such a difference in his life that he had given his entire household to this young Jewish boy in order to run. How he was able to turn it all over to him. So we know that Joseph was prominent. Secondly, notice with me, he was also a man of position. Notice in your Bible how often we are told about the position that Joseph had. In verse 4, it talks about the fact that he was the overseer. In verse 5, it talks about the fact that everything that Joseph touched, because of Joseph, God blessed. In verse 6, we find that Potiphar had left everything as a result of that in the hand of Joseph. As you jump down to verses 8 and 9, when Joseph is talking there and remonstrating with Potiphar's wife, he tells her that in his defense, one of the reasons why I cannot do this is because your husband has left everything to me. And so Joseph was in total control. Now, I'm sure that if you are involved in any kind of business, as you have listened and read to this, you realize that Potiphar has put himself in a very dangerous position. It is never a wise thing to be in a position where the only thing you know about what's going on is the bread that you're eating. And yet, Potiphar had such tremendous confidence in this man Joseph that he had given him everything, the oversight of what he had. Now we see that not only did he have these other things, tremendous position, but we also see that as a result of all of this, he had tremendous prominence. And of course, along with that prominence and that position came power. Joseph's consummate skill, his ability to administrate, his ability to put things together, not only had worked well for him when he had worked for his father, but now that he was here in Egypt, it was working well as far as Potiphar was concerned. And so Potiphar had made him the comptroller, if you will, of his entire household. And Potiphar said, I'm not only giving you, Joseph, the responsibility in order to carry this out, but I'm also going to give you the authority in which to do it. So he's been put in charge. He's got power. He's got prominence. He's got position. All of the motivations that drive a man or a woman today to get ahead, to be the head dog, to grab for that brass ring, to do everything that you can to be number one. He also had popularity, and that should come to no surprise. When Joseph walked in the door of that household, he was almost like what we have in business today, where there are certain people that just really have an emphasis on coming in and taking businesses maybe that have not been run very well. And all of a sudden they come in and they take that business over and it flourishes. That's exactly what happened with Joseph. God began to bless Potiphar's house because of Joseph. And I'm sure that people would begin to talk about it and say things like, you know, it was pretty dark around here before Joseph came in. I don't know what in the world that man does. He seems to have some kind of magic, but things have changed, and they've changed in a very positive way. And since he's been here, things have begun to flourish. We've seen a lot more profit come. Things are just going our way. And then you'd hear conversations like, whatever you do, make sure you take good care of Joseph. Because he's kind of like that goose that lays the golden egg. He is our bread ticket, or our meal ticket, if you will. He was popular. Everybody liked Joseph because of the success that he was having. So we find that he had prominence, he had position, he had power, he had popularity. But there was one other one, and this one perhaps should not be included in this list, and yet we cannot go over it because we're going to deal with it in just a few moments. But he had a physique. He was physically attractive. Look at verse 6. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. He was good looking. He was a well-built individual. And I want to show you something that will settle a dispute that has been going on for as long as I can remember. Turn over, if you will, to Genesis chapter 29 and verse 17. Remember when we were talking about Joseph's father Jacob and his wives? We talked about Leah. And Leah was one who meant tender-eyed or meant cow-eyed. She had some problems, there's no question. And verse 17 says, Leah was tender-eyed, or delicate, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Now, you look at that last phrase about Rachel, Joseph's mother. Now, turn back to chapter 39 and verse 6, and notice again that Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. I want you to know that that solves forever the major question, the major issue that has raged for years, that children get their good looks from their mother. I hear some feminine amens. Joseph apparently had gotten all of his favorable physical characteristics from his mother Rachel. You know, it's interesting. As you read through the Bible, you don't find a lot that talks about good-looking people or handsome people. As you go through the Bible, there's probably only about 7 or 8 instances where God stops and says, this woman was beautiful, or this man was handsome, or well-favored, or good-looking. You think about that. And yet, in our own culture, so much is placed upon that. News anchors are replaced because they don't look quite good enough. People many times in public positions are replaced because they don't have the image that we're after. Teenagers many times can be very cruel one with another, and as a result of that, the pressure that that places upon them when comments are made about how they look, that they will go to tremendous extremes to try to change that. And yet we don't find a whole lot about God talking about how important the way we look on the outside is as we go through the Bible. You find people like David and Daniel and Absalom and Daniel's three friends, and Esther, and Sarah, and Rachel, and of course, our man today, Joseph. But you find very few others where God talks about how beautiful their physical appearance is. His physique. He was a good-looking, handsome man, and we're going to see in just a moment, that is going to get him into some very serious trouble as a result of that. Now let's look secondly at the test of purity. Oftentimes, the greatest tests that we have come not when we are down and out, but when we are going through our times of greatest prosperity. Most people will handle adversity far better and far easier than what they will prosperity. You see this over and over again, that when people were at the zenith, at the very peak of their careers, when everything was going well, that's when the tests came. That's when the temptations came. That's when the problems came. Men like Solomon, men like David, men like Saul. Temptation catches them at a point in their life where very often they have become so smug because of their accomplishments. They look around and they say, see what I have done. Look at the monuments that I have built. See how well I have done. And as a result of that, they begin to forget. Every good and perfect gift comes from where? From above. God is the one who enables us. God is the one who gives us the mind to come up with creative things. God is the one who gives us the energy to go for it and to get things done. But you see, we can come to a place where we get smugly complacent in our own laurels. We read our own newspaper clippings. We become convinced of what I can do rather than the fact that God is the one who's in charge, and that our dependence must be with him. Joseph is in the midst of the greatest popularity that he has experienced. We come to verse 7, and it says, and it came to pass after these things. What things? The things that we've just been talking about. The prosperity, the blessing. I mean, if Joseph would have had quotas in his business, he's gone right off the sheet. If they would have been drawing graphs, it would have been going up and up and they would have run out of paper. Joseph was at a point in his life where after being thrown in a pit and going through all of that, it would have been very easy for him to say, well, you know, I deserve this now. I've paid my dues. Hey, I've gone through the hard times. Now it's time for me to just kick back and live a little. It would have been easy to think that way. We find here, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife, that's Mrs. Potiphar, cast her eyes upon Joseph. A translation literally of that is she ogled him. She cast a longing glance in his direction. And you know how that can be done. When you were single, or perhaps when you were not single, you've been someplace where someone has cast a look at you in that direction. Verse 7, and she said, lie with me. She said, I want you to come to bed with me. Verse 8, but he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. The test of purity. Now, there are certain things in this particular section we want to look at. First of all, we want to see the power of the temptation. And we not only want to see the power of the temptation, but we also want to see the power over the temptation. We live in a day, quite frankly, when people are telling us that modern man is incapable of living above sin. That modern man could not go through the same kind of temptation that Joseph went through and do it successfully. But Joseph, who was tempted, stood, and he stood victoriously. Some may argue that because that happened, perhaps his temptation was not as severe as what you and I face today. Let me point out some significant things as far as the power of this temptation. First of all, I want you to notice that this was a surprise temptation. It came at a time when everything was going well. Joseph's influence with his master was at a peak. He was having inroads to the people of his day. Things had not looked so good for him in a very long time. He was not looking now for something bad to happen. Who would ever dream that a woman of such high estate, of such prominence, would even consider trying to tempt a slave to come and to have a relationship with her? He could not believe his ears when he heard it. It was a surprise to him. And oftentimes, temptation comes with no RSVP. Temptation comes as a surprise. Temptation comes when we're not expecting it to come. It just kind of pops out at us. We don't realize that or realize the potential of what that temptation can mean in our life. Secondly, it was not only a surprise temptation, it was also a sustained temptation. Notice it says in the scripture in verse 10, she spoke to Joseph when? Day by day. It wasn't just one proposition where she came up and said, Joseph, wow, I like the way you look. That new camel aftershave that you're using. Oh, man, it just, you know, I could walk a mile for this stuff. I mean, it's great. It's wonderful, you know, and really get pumped up about it. And then when he said no, she said, well, I tried. Joseph, you know, I'm sorry, but I tried, and you turned me down, and that's it. And, well, that's the way it goes. You know, you win some, you lose some. That's not the way it was. It says that she propositioned him day after day after day. Now, how do you do that? Oh, just a smile sometimes. Just a wink. Sometimes it's just body language. It's letting that person know that, honey, if you want it, it's right here and the microwave's close. And we can heat it up quick. You see, this was a proposition that went on day after day. She continually is reminding Joseph. Temptation once? Yes. Temptation daily? Yes. Two very different experiences. There are many that can be confronted with that one temptation and be very strong. And yet when that temptation comes, like a bombardment, over and over and over again, it begins to break them down to the